Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Andy Murray, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph. We are at the halfway stage of the Miami Open, and my word, there's been a lot to catch up on, because Great Britain has a world number one tennis player for the first time ever in many people's books. Some people are saying that Virginia Wade managed to get there in 1975 as a doubles world number one, but they weren't really doing the rankings back then. Jamie Murray, we absolutely know, is the world number one doubles player at the moment, or he certainly will be when the rankings are released on Monday. And so fantastic achievement for him. We've also had Heather Watson and Joe Konta from a British perspective getting into the last 16, the first British woman to do that since Jo Jury in 1988, and there's two of them who've managed to do it. We'll be discussing our Miami memories. There's many of those from over the years. And we're going to have our own little game of confessions in the appropriately named My Rubbish Prediction, in honour of Catherine Whittaker, who's right here on the Tennis Podcast. Hello, Catherine. Yeah,
not for long, if you carry on like that, David.
Well, accurate, you know.
We'll find out. It's been a very cathartic week discovering how many other people have made predictions as rubbish as me and are prepared to admit to them, as I seem to do weekly.
Yeah, certainly all of them combined probably do add up about the same number as you've made in total. But anyway, we've got other things to discuss before we get on to my rubbish predictions. And it is a rather more serious discussion that we need to have, just to follow up on last week when obviously the news broke of Ray Moore's comments, and he subsequently resigned pretty much the next day. I think it was absolutely the right thing to do. It was inevitable, given exactly what he did say and the understandable, I think, completely understandable reaction to his words. The comments of Novak Djokovic, which we obviously pored over last week, and have subsequently been followed up from himself with a Facebook statement in which he tried to clarify his position. I have to say, I don't think he did the greatest job in the world at doing so in that particular post. And I think he did a much better job when he eventually spoke to the media in Miami at his pre-tournament press conference, having spent half an hour in the company of Billie Jean King. Now, Catherine, you and I have spent a little bit of time with her in London when she was at the Royal Albert Hall. She's an extraordinary woman in so many different ways. But even on a very personal one-to-one level, I don't think it is possible to spend time with that woman, given the experiences she's had, the knowledge she clearly has, and the sheer presence that she has, not to be influenced by the way she talks. And I suspect that Novak Djokovic has probably learnt a few things over the last week, and certainly learnt a few things in the company of Billie Jean King.
Yeah, I certainly hope so, and I'm prepared to believe so, because as you say, I think I can't believe anybody wouldn't be affected. How privileged he is to have been able to spend half an hour with Billie Jean King, learning from her wisdom. So I hope so, I'm prepared to believe so, and even if even if not, I mean, let's just imagine worst case scenario here. I'm not saying this is the case, but worst case scenario is that this is all a PR stunt. This is all, you know, oh crikey, I'm really blindsided by the reaction to what I said after the Indian Wells final and need to do some PR smoothing over here. Even that, even the worst case scenario, recognises the fact that it's really not okay not to believe in equal prize money, and it recognises that, you know, for repairing one's image, it's really not okay to feel that way. So even in that scenario, I'm pleased with how events have played out this week. And I think most likely it's not the worst case scenario. Look, there has been PR at play. No one's naive enough to think that there's not. But equally, I think we know that he did spend half an hour with Billie Jean King, and I defy anybody not to be come out of that experience better informed and with a lot more wisdom. So, look, I've been depressed at points this week. I've had to turn off my Twitter notifications at points this week. There have been moments where I've thought perhaps the world isn't where I thought it was, and I've been a bit disheartened by that. Particularly because I think what Djokovic said in Indian Wells, it gave people that agreed with him sort of a legitimacy to the way they felt, and they felt like, oh yeah, I'm going to, you know, come out and wave the flag for I don't believe in equal prize money either. And I think at least that has largely silenced that, or silenced the sort of less rational side of that argument. Look, I'm completely prepared to listen to rational arguments against equal prize money. I've heard some quite compelling ones. I haven't agreed with them. I think there are counters to all of them, as you know, and as I explained last week. But I'm perfectly prepared to listen to them, and I think it enriches the debate. And as I also explained last week, I think there is a debate to be had because the current situation isn't perfect. However, I think we're in a lot more of a satisfactory place now than we were this time last week.
I'd agree with that. I'd also just add two small points to that. One is, I think Djokovic has been trying to say that perhaps he didn't come across as he quite intended to a week ago. We have to say that, whether you believe it or whether you don't. That is something that he has tried to impress upon people over the last week. The other thing is, I think some people, as you say, have used it as an opportunity to voice opinions that maybe they wouldn't have felt able to do before. And I think that Novak Djokovic's view is a heck of a lot more diluted than many of the ones that I've been hearing over the last week. And I think he's because of his position as the world number one, he's inevitably been... I think some of the things that have been attributed to him, I've read a couple of columns this week that have rather disturbed me, in that people have been putting a few words in his mouth that he didn't actually say. He did say some things, but certainly not on the level of one or two of the columns that I read. But anyway, we've been over it over the last week, and I do agree with you. I think we're in a lot better place now than we were a week ago. Once again, just a note, I think Andy Murray's position in categorically saying I believe in equal prize money at all combined events is certainly the view that I have, and whether or not it's my view or not, is I just think it's impressive and pleasing to see somebody who's prepared to very clearly state what their opinion is and why, and risk not being very popular as a result.
Yeah, I think it's marvellous. I mean, I know we risk this being sort of the Andy Murray fan show because everyone knows, you know, we know him fairly well. We've interviewed him, you know, we're British. But I think he just continues to prove himself to be a great tennis player and a really great human being, really. I mean, I was just so heartened by his comments this week and so heartened by how simply he sees it. It's just so clear to him how things... It's just, you know, there's no... he can't fathom why there wouldn't be equality. And that's, you know, that's of course how I see it. You know, I look forward to the day where someone says, I'm a feminist, and everyone just shrugs like, yeah, of course you are. Like, you know, you don't need to point out I'm not a racist anymore. I mean, that's essentially what you are doing by saying I'm a feminist. It's that sort of, it shouldn't have to be a positive assertion. It should be you are by default feminist. Anyway, and that's what you got from Andy Murray. And I thought it was wonderful. And thank goodness for Andy Murray. And as you say, it should not go unnoticed that he's putting a lot on the line, because men's locker rooms are pretty macho, unenlightened places a lot of the time. And he will undoubtedly be getting stick, and he doesn't care because he knows he's right. And that's just great.
He's pretty happy at the moment as well, Catherine. I think it took him roughly 12 seconds to put something out on social media the moment that it was confirmed that his brother was mathematically assured of becoming the world number one doubles player. And it's no surprise. They're very close. He says he can barely watch his brother. He gets very stressed when he's playing matches. But just a word on Jamie Murray's achievement there. We've talked about it in passing before, particularly when Jamie Murray won the Australian Open doubles title alongside Bruno Suarez. But to get to number one in the world, to do it consistently over a year, I was looking back 4 years ago in 2012 when he had 14 different doubles partners. And he actually played in the Loughborough Futures event or whatever it's called at one stage in that year and didn't even make the final. He was, I think he was really close to calling it quits and just giving it up. And here he is 4 years later at the top of the tennis world.
Andy hinted at that, didn't he, in the interview I did with him at Queen's a few weeks ago. He said, I asked him about what it was like to watch his brother win a Grand Slam doubles title. And he said, I didn't think I'd see the day. He said it wasn't until he reached the Wimbledon final last year, really, that he started to entertain that as a possibility, and that's just amazing. I mean, there's not much I can say because the achievement speaks for itself, doesn't it? He is world number one. He's the best person in the world at what he does, and that speaks for itself. Amazing. Well done.
It does, and a cracking guy too. Aside from all that, you know, just really nice to see that nice guys can finish first once in a while. Excellent. Joe Konta and Heather Watson, we mentioned in the intro, Catherine, into the last 16. It was only moments ago as we record this that Joe Konta made it. Really close match against a very informed Russian in Elena Vesnina, who's been playing some great stuff of late. And there was a moment where Konta went from 4-2 up in the decider to 4-5 down. And I thought at that particular point, I'm not sure she's going to get over the finish line here. And she just refused to let it slip. Now, she may have had it taken away from her. It can happen, but she didn't wilt. And yet again, Konta shows another stride. And equally, Watson did the same a night ago. A third set match, she was down in trouble against Yanina Whitmire, came back to win. Konta's been doing it for a while. Watson, we've been waiting for this from a British perspective, haven't we? Because that Serena Williams match at Wimbledon last year suddenly has sort of started to look like an anomaly itself over the past couple of years, because she hasn't been able to string these wins together. Suddenly she's doing so.
Yeah, it's I wonder if they're exchanging notes behind the scenes. I don't know actually how much they do interact or whether they're friends. I don't know that they're not friends. I don't know that they're friends. I suspect there's quite a healthy rivalry between them. I think certainly it's making this sort of feeling that something good is happening in British women's tennis is certainly spurring them all on. It must be desperately hard for Laura Robson, I have to say. Spare a thought for her to be so excluded from that feeling of excitement. I mean, she's doing her best to get in on the action, but the facts are that just at the moment she's so far outside of that I can only imagine how hard that is for her. So spare a thought for Laura Robson, but they're doing brilliantly, both Heather Watson and Johanna Konta, coming through these tough matches. That Konta one had shades of the match against Denisa Alatova at the Australian Open, where she failed to serve it out, and I like you, was thinking, oh no, is this going to be the old Joe Konta? Is she going to throw it away here. And no, she broke immediately back and she did it. And that's a real, real difference in mentality, isn't it? I mean, Heather Watson's always been good at the fight back victory, but still credit to her for doing it and for getting into this position.
And just a little forerunner for the My Rubbish Predictions competition that will be coming up soon on the Tennis Podcast. I do know somebody who in the year starting predictions for the rest of the year said that Heather Watson would rank ahead of Jo Konta by the end of the year. I know there was somebody who did do that, and that somebody was me. So anyway, enough of that. But Konta, I think the feeling I've had over the past few months is, yeah, okay, what's the catch? At some point, or whatever facade she's built up of being able to be a top 20, top 30 player in the world, it's going to slip, and she's just going to go back to what she used to be, because leopards can't change their spots, or that kind of feeling. But I just don't see that now at all. She just keeps on reaffirming that this is her, that this is what she has in her capabilities, and she's proving it over and over. Fantastic to see from her perspective. On the men's side, Catherine, it's all been a bit of a mess, hasn't it? Roger Federer did his pre-tournament press conference, said that he was fit again after injuring his knee, as he revealed in that conference that it was due to slipping and twisting a little bit awkwardly when he was bathing one of his kids. And before he could play his match against Juan Martin Del Potro, he had to pull out with gastroenteritis, and it's something that has been causing a lot of the players problems in Miami. I suspect it may be the same thing that put paid to Rafael Nadal a night ago when he had to pull out in the third set of his match. But yeah, it's all been a bit of a mess.
It has. Rafael Nadal retiring.
First time in 6 years.
Yeah, quite something. I mean, I think the conditions are challenging, but not spectacularly more challenging than they have been in previous years in Miami. I mean, you know you're getting humidity, heat and humidity in Miami, don't you? But yeah, that was a really bizarre sight, seeing Nadal retire and to see him booed. I mean, come on, this guy's built up enough benefit of the doubt. You know that if he's retiring, there is a pretty serious reason why he cannot play that tennis match in front of him.
I must say, I hate seeing players of that level getting booed. You know, players who are in the top three or four in the world who just keep doing it over and over. And you know, we had it with Djokovic, didn't we, in, was it Dubai a few weeks back? And you're thinking, come on.
Yeah, being booed for retiring, I think, is, unless there's something, you know, very fishy looking at play, I think is really harsh. I mean, it must be an awful fit. I mean, these people are where they are because they're the ultimate competitors. They're more competitive than you and I can ever imagine. You know, I think I'm competitive at a game of Monopoly, and I can't even really conceive of how competitive, you know, the likes of Rafael Nadal, etc. It must just kill them inside to concede, to wave the white flag in a tennis match. So
I could definitely beat you at Monopoly.
Whoa there, David. Whoa there. don't make me rise to this. I'm bigger than that. Come on. Yeah, it must be killing them inside, and then for them to be booed off a tennis court is... I mean, look, it's heat of the moment, isn't it? It's people that have paid top dollar to see a full day's tennis, possibly even just to see, you know, their favourite player, and then to see them wander off the court. But maybe it's hard to be rational in those moments, but it was a terrible shame to see that treatment of Nadal.
It was. Novak Djokovic came out showing no real ill effects from the... Well, I suppose the controversy that's followed over the last week. He's just dusted himself down and took on Britain's Kyle Edmund, who'd had a great third set tiebreak win in the previous round. And did all right, actually, Edmund, the man who, of course, won the tiebreak tens tournament in the Royal Albert Hall at the end of last year. And he did pretty well in that final set tiebreak against Vesely in the previous round to the one against Djokovic. But ultimately 6-3, 6-3. And Djokovic is off and running once more as he tries to win these back-to-back tournaments. So hard to do, isn't it, in Indian Wells and Miami? But he's already done it before. He can do it again. So we'll be bringing you the final results in next week's Tennis Podcast. podcast as to who has won these events and all the results that unfold over the next week in Miami, which is, Catherine, one of the premier tournaments, isn't it, on the circuit, both men and women. And it's a 96 draw on the men's side. It's a week and a half long tournament, nearly 2 weeks. I do feel as though it's actually probably dropped in level a little bit over the last few years. It used to be the one that all the players would refer to as the fifth slam in the 90s. Now,
well, that's how it branded itself, didn't it?
It was, and Roger Federer actually referred to it as that in his press conference the other day. And I have to say, I felt that was a bit of an empty comment in some regards, because it has fallen behind in stature to Indian Wells, maybe not in terms of points and prize money, but in terms of feel. Indian Wells has really invested such an extraordinary amount, and Miami has trod water a little bit by comparison.
Yeah, it's strange, isn't it, how that happens? I mean, as I think we were saying when you raised the whole issue of, you know, should we start reevaluating how we think of the Davis Cup in the grand scheme of achievements in tennis? And you can't just decide where something, how significant something is in the grand scheme of things. I mean, there is just a feeling now that Indian Wells is a bit above, I would say, all the other Master Series events.
Would you create a new category for it? As Novak Djokovic was suggesting, that we should have some sort of super
I certainly
segment.
Think that should be considered. Yeah, I certainly think just at the moment it feels like it warrants that. Now, I can envisage a few practical issues with that. I'm sure there are many others lurking just beneath the surface that I can't begin to comprehend at the moment. It might not be feasible, but I certainly think...
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life, and of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
It should be considered by the ATP. And by the sounds of their response, I think they are open to considering it. The problem they have is that Shanghai are also asking for the same. They actually asked for it before Indian Wells said that they would like to be considered for a new sort of mid-tier category between Grand Slam and Masters level. And undoubtedly it would cause a lot of unrest among the other events. But hey, if it keeps everybody on their toes and if it keeps everybody investing in their events for fear of falling behind, that can probably only be good for tennis, right?
We'll see. We'll see. I'm unsure about it, to be honest, until I saw some sort of structure put in place. But certainly as an event itself, Indian Wells is the standout for me. It's certainly the ones I've been to. I haven't been to Shanghai. It's difficult for me to judge on that one. But Indian Wells is a special place. Miami, though, has a charm all of its own, I think, partly because of where it is. It is an incredibly exciting place to be in the world. I think compared to Indian Wells, which is sort of beautiful in terms of its landscape, but is a much more sleepy environment compared to Miami, of course. But so much has happened at that tournament over the years. I remember back in the 90s, there was a final between Andre Agassi and Pete Sampras, and Agassi actually allowed the final to take place at least an hour or two later because Sampras had got a stomach bug and was being sick in the morning. Sampras ended up winning and beating Agassi after being given extra time to play the final.
Gosh, I didn't know about that. That's amazing. Would that happen in this day and age? Possibly.
It's pretty rare. I have to say, I don't think I've ever heard of that before. There was also the cracker in 1998 when Marcelo Rios thrashed Agassi in the final and became the world number one tennis player. I remember incredible scenes in Miami. Rios just had huge support coming from Chile and many people from that part of the world coming up to support him. And back then, the idea that Rios would end up retiring, not winning a Grand Slam title, would have seemed absolutely absurd. He managed to win Indian Wells and Miami back to back. He then went on to, I think, win Rome as well pretty comfortably and ended up losing to Carlos Moyer in the French Open. But that was a wonderful scene. We've had some other fantastic memories coming in on Twitter here at Tennis Podcast. Do follow us there. Claire Gammond said, what about when Andy Murray beat David Ferrer in that marathon final of 3 years ago? Do you remember that one, Catherine?
I do, yeah. I'm glad I wasn't participating in that one. I remember it making me feel exhausted just to bear witness to that.
Well, if you consider that David Ferrer, actually, it's the first time and the only time I've ever seen him cramp on a tennis court. And he cramped at the end of a rally and just fell over like a tree being felled. I was commentating on that match at the time for Five Live, and that was 3 hours in the heat, and it was hard enough trying to describe it, let alone play it. There is a good memory here from our colleague Craig Gabriel, a couple of them actually, extraordinary memories, not exactly very happy ones, I have to say. One of them from when Thomas Muster, a man we talked about in our comebacks episode a few weeks ago, when he got crushed by the car. Craig was telling me that he was actually in the car right behind Muster's when Muster's car was smashed into in the front and his legs got crushed in that incident. And he also remembered when Miami was hit by a hurricane, I think it was in 1993. And I remember watching this on TV and turning on the coverage for the day and them saying, there's not going to be any play today. Here's why. And they showed a picture of the centre court, and basically the stand had blown down. So you can get an idea of just how devastating that was, but they still managed to get the tournament finished on time. I also had a little exchange today, Catherine. This is awful name dropping, I know it is, but I had a little exchange with Goran Ivanisevic. Just to remind him, Catherine, of 1996, when he got through to the final, he'd beaten Pete Sampras in the semis, and he's playing Andre Agassi in the final. And Goran walks out onto the court, and everybody's waiting for this guy who's been in the form of his life up until that point. He was in his seventh final of the year, and it was only March. And they're all waiting for the 130-mile-an-hour serves to be hit past Agassi. And Goran just sort of rolls his arm over at 80 miles an hour. And he'd basically gone to sleep the night before, woken up with a stiff neck, and he couldn't move. He had 3 hours of treatment, tried to play, and then at the end of the fourth game, he had to retire because he got a stiff neck from sleeping wrong.
It's not a glamorous injury, is it?
It's not a really good one, is it? Crowd were booing him, and they ended up having to get Jim Courier from down the road to buy a helicopter to come play an exhibition match. Goran said afterwards, "You have to be 100% to beat Agassi. I would now is maybe two."
Well, it's given you an opportunity to do your Goran impression.
Thanks.
So it's been a worthwhile anecdote.
It has, isn't it? So plenty of memories from the tournament in Miami. Many more have come in at Tennis Podcast. Just a couple of quick ones here. Ali says, what about Kim Clijsters coming back from injury in 2005 to win both Indian Wells and Miami back-to-back? Aaron Jones says the Serena Enan final of 2007. Serena coming back from a 6-love first set and multiple match points to get the win. Pure class. And then what about this? This one really does ring true to me. Andrew Friedman says, the eye-popping play of a young Rafa Nadal in the 2005 final. He lost to Federer in 5 sets, but the rivalry began right there.
11 years ago. Unbelievable.
11 years ago. And then Nadal would go on, of course, to win the French Open just a couple of months later. So now it's a cracking tournament, and I think we're in for an excellent, conclusion to the tournament over the next 5 or 6 days. Now, Catherine, in honour of yourself, my rubbish predictions, what you got?
I've got an objection to the framing of the question is what I've got, David.
Okay, well, just as a brief reminder, everybody, does anybody remember it would have been about 3 years ago, the year that Andy Murray won Wimbledon, when Sabina...
Yeah, that's what everyone remembers that Wimbledon for, David.
Yeah,
that's all.
What they really want to remember it for is when Serena Williams was the all-conquering player in the world, as usual, and Catherine said halfway through the tournament that it is a foregone conclusion that Serena Williams will win Wimbledon, didn't you? And guess who was there to say, hold your horses, Catherine Whittaker?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Unfortunately, I can't deny that this happened because it is still available to listen. You can hear me say those words if you so wish. You can go back through our archive. I mean, please don't, but you can if you want to.
I'll post the link on Twitter at TennisPodcast.
I've grown. I've grown as a person since then.
Yeah, you have. And... anyway, Sabina Lisicki, as I said at the time, was a pretty dangerous customer if she got in the mood. And lo and behold, she went and beat Serena. So I was right and Catherine was wrong. Anyway, my rubbish predictions was the hashtag. And I have to say, let's be honest, I could have a whole episode of them for myself, if we're completely honest. One of my particular favourites was saying that Juan Martín Del Potro would win the Australian Open a few years ago. And I think he lost in the 3rd round.
That was the one where you said Wozniacki would win the women's as well, wasn't it? Isn't that what you said? And she had you said she'd win a Grand Slam that year and she had that really woeful year. Anyway,
no, I think I said she would reach a final is what right. I actually said. And then the year later she did, I'll have you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, no, I don't remember any of that. What I do know for an absolute fact, as Ali has very kindly reminded me, is that somebody in the year beginning predictions for 2016 says here, didn't the Tennis Podcast predictions at the start of the year have Australia winning the Davis Cup this year? Hashtag oops.
Yours did. Mine certainly didn't. I'm taking no part in that at all. That is a David Law specific prediction. I would like that to be known.
Right. Okay. Anyway, that is true. I did do that. And as I said, I've also got Watson finishing above Konta. That's ridiculous. Anyway, let's turn the attentions to our followers on Twitter, because thankfully everybody has dutifully stumped up their embarrassing moments. Hashtag my rubbish prediction. And there are some absolute corkers. Get a load of these. Andy Murray fan, Andy Millman, says, I thought that Richard Gasquet would be Andy Murray's main rival for world number one.
Wow, that didn't quite work out as you planned, did it? I mean, I feel bad laughing at the challenge of Richard Gasquet because he's been great, but he's certainly not delivered on anything like that sort of promise.
No.
Has he?
No, he really hasn't. We've also got Greg Gaynor, who says, I remember, and he's... The only problem with what Greg Gaynor is doing here is that he's not saying his own rubbish prediction, he's saying somebody else's, which I did say that was allowed, because I just want them to be as bad as possible. He's highlighting somebody from ESPN called Mike Wilburn, who apparently said in 2008 that Roger Federer was done and should retire.
Well, that's embarrassing, isn't it? I think that probably deserves outing. He's probably living as a recluse somewhere. that ESPN man now in shame.
Yeah, I think you're right. I'm, you know, hang your head forever is what I would suggest would be a really, really good idea to do. What else have we got here? Some absolute beauties. We've got Bridget Kelly says, I predicted Bernard Tomic would stop making rubbish predictions about his year-end ranking. Well, that didn't work out too well. Jordan Holt says, I predicted Serena to retire after her Wimbledon performance in 2014. Nope, that didn't happen.
Yes, you were very wrong. Was that Jordan? You were very wrong. But, I mean, Serena's
2 years wrong so far.
Been nothing if not unpredictable in her career. So, I don't think you should hang your head too far because, you know, she's surprised us so many times, not least by not winning Wimbledon in 2013. I mean, that was a surprise, wasn't it?
Yeah, huge surprise. Jordan, I completely disagree with Catherine. Hang your head in shame is what I say. Raphael Banfi says, Benoit Paire in the top five by the Australian Open of 2016 is what Raphael said.
Oops. Yeah, that's embarrassing. That's unequivocally embarrassing, Raphael.
Yeah, because Benoit Paire is currently 22 in the world, and the highest he's ever been is 18 in the world. That is not top five, Raphael. Now, what else? We have Don Draper. This is one of my absolute favourites.
It's not the real Don Draper, David. Just like that.
Might be. says Djokovic to be a one-slam wonder.
Oh, I really applaud Don. I mean, again, not your real name, Don, I'm sure. I really applaud Don for outing such foolhardiness. Well done. That's very brave of you.
Greg Gaynor's back again. Says, I thought that Ryan Harrison would be a top 10 player and be the next American great.
That's the worst of the lot. Ryan Harrison, good luck to him, and he's plugging away and doing his best, but he was only really talked about because of the dearth of American players. I don't think he ever really had the talent to be discussed in even top 20 terms, really, let's be honest. I thought he would
do a lot better than he has, I have to say. And listen, maybe he still will. He's, as you say, he is a worker, that guy. He's still trying, but he does appear to be a lot more limited than he was certainly billed as in the early parts of his career. Robert Williams predicted that Gulbis would be a top five player a few years ago. And Ethan Lee says that I've put all of my fan energy and fantasy tennis into Jerzy Janowicz and Ernest Gulbis.
Well, you know, first of all, Ernest Gulbis has the talent to be a top five player. He just doesn't have the mindset. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he got to number 9 in the world, didn't he? I mean, it's not. I know he didn't hang around there very long and went on to win about 2 matches in 9 months or something. But he is a fantastically talented tennis player. He's just got a very bizarre head on his shoulders.
Do you know Jerzy Janowicz is now 99 in the world? Crikey. He was once 14 in the world.
Wow. Wow, I mean, that's incredible. But again, he was talked about, you know, when he first burst onto the scene and he's 6'6" at least, I think, perhaps 6'8".
Six foot eight. I look up to him.
You know your height, Dave.
I'll tell you, when I start looking up to people, I leave the room because, frankly, that's my thing.
6'8" and that enormous serve, and he had that fantastic run at Wimbledon, beaten by Andy Murray, and he's... Crikey, I mean, I haven't even thought about Jerzy Janowicz in several months, and there he is at 99 in the world, yeah.
I particularly enjoyed this one. Mark Doherty has retweeted the Andy Murray tweet from about 3 years ago when he said, mark my words, you've heard it here first, Caroline Garcia is going to be world number one.
Hey, he wasn't alone there.
Hashtag my rubbish prediction.
Yeah, I mean, perhaps world number one was... a bridge too far. I mean, who am I to disagree with Andy Murray, though? But, I mean, she certainly is currently failing to deliver on quite a lot of promise. I certainly think there really ought to be more to come from her.
Yeah, she's a real talent. There's no question about that. Jay Clark said, Andy Murray will win more slams than Novak Djokovic. Oh, dear, yeah. Jay. That one hasn't worked out too well.
There's technically still time.
He's 9 behind. He's nine behind. He's 28 years old. How long do you think he's going to go on and play
I'm
for?
I'm saying technically there's still time.
Maybe he'll win nine in a row. Tom G says that Gael Monfils would win at least one slam, reach many major semi-finals and quarters, and rival the Big Four's fan bases.
And by many people's estimations, he ought to have. Not by mine. I think that...
Hold on a minute. You're saying you didn't think he was that good.
He was. I mean, he was better than Andy Murray when they were juniors. I know that that doesn't necessarily mean anything, but he has the talent, unquestionably. And I think lots of people say, look, he's sacrificed results in order to be this great entertainer. And to that I say, I don't think there's any other way he could do it. I don't think if he sacrificed that part of himself, that personality, he wouldn't be half the tennis player that he is. That's the only way he knows how to do it. And he has enriched the tennis world for it. It's a shame that he hasn't been able to do that and perhaps get more consistent results, because, you know, potential wise, I mean, he is, you know, pretty much universally considered the best athlete on tour, and he's a pretty skillful, talented tennis player to boot. So, again, I think that's not the most preposterous prediction.
Not the most preposterous. We have one suggestion here that anybody who'd said that Roger Federer and Andy Roddick would be a great rivalry was guilty of a rubbish prediction. That was said a lot back in late 2003. And I'll tell you what, right at the front of the queue saying that would have been a rubbish prediction is Andy Roddick, because he's always quite quick to admit to that. Sander says that Bodan Olerak was going to be top 10 at materials. Do you remember Bodan Olerak, Catherine?
Crikey, there is another name I haven't heard in a really long time. I do, but I don't ever remember him being in the top 10.
No, he got to 22 in the world. Not quite, nearly. So that isn't going to happen. That was a rubbish prediction. We also have our good friend and occasional participant on the tennis podcast, Dave Levy, who said my rubbish prediction was that David Law would beat Catherine Whittaker at tennis.
I'm offended that he ever thought that to start with. And I hope that he, again, sort of lives in a cave somewhere, feeling shamefaced and unable to face the world in light of what a fool I've made of him.
Yeah. Well, all right. Well, double or quits on Monopoly is what I say. Daniel, we'll just finish with, says, this isn't tennis, but I said to my dad when I first saw Lionel Messi play at Chelsea's Stamford Bridge that he would be nothing.
I mean, yeah, there's just no reason to confess to that. I mean, that's,
But that's the beauty of it.
This is, people are having a really cathartic experience this week with the tennis podcast interactive element of the show.
There is nothing I can be more proud of than somebody who gets it so horrifically wrong and is there to say, yes, yes, I did. So, Catherine Whittaker.
I'm not going to chime in because
That pretty much wraps it up, I think, for another edition of the Tennis Podcast brought to you in association with The Telegraph. Who's going to win Miami, Catherine? Talking of predictions.
Oh, I don't know.
Men's and women's, come on.
Maybe Novak Djokovic and, God, will Victoria Azarenka do the double? That is the question. I think she might, you know. I think they both might do the double.
That's very exciting. Well, because we're on a bit of a roll with the old predictions, and it is what we do for a living, except we don't get paid for it, we should say that we have decided to do a match of the day daily prediction from now on. From all the Masters 1000 and Premier level tournaments and the Grand Slams. How'd you like that, Catherine Whittaker? It's time to lay it on the line and actually see who's the best at this stuff.
I love it because, you know, as we've established, I've grown as a person since my days of terrible predicting, and I now feel confident in my ability.
What do you base that on?
She says, giggling through her microphone.
Right. Okay. Well, look, we're all rubbish. Let's just be honest. All of you, all of us. That's fine. Let's just be rubbish together. We'll speak to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.